All right, we're doing it again, apparently. It's the Padded Room Podcast again. We're taking it from the top. This is my second attempt at recording this show. My name is Darian. I am all alone this week, inmates. It's just me and you. Let me scoop my chair in uncomfortably close. Maybe I'll just whisper the whole show to you. What do you think of that? I can get in real close. You know, I watched a movie this week. It's pretty scary. Has anybody deleted the episode yet? I'm sure somebody has. It's just me and mates. Buddy is at some kind of a biker dinner, and Jason is not getting off his couch, so that's what you got. And I am also having an allergy attack, so I have neither the time nor the inclination to edit every sneeze out of this podcast, so you're just going to have to bear with me. I'm going to sneeze. I'm going to probably wipe the microphone off afterward, and we can move on. You know what I mean? We don't have to pretend like we just started dating. We've been together for 13 years, goddammit. I would shit with the door open in front of you. How about that's how comfortable I am in our relationship. Okay, so I like to think that you're as comfortable with me. You taking a shit with the door open and me in the bathroom brushing my teeth. You know what I'm saying? That's where we're at. I feel that level of commitment here with you, whoever you are. All right, I will try my best to keep the sneezing to a minimum. I did take an allergy pill. I should be okay. At the very least, I shouldn't die during the podcast. I don't think I will die. I got the usual shit show to get into here, inmates. I got horror news, listener mail, all kinds of things to do and talk about and experience with you. Let's start things off with a little horror news, shall we?
Horror news.
Yes, sir. I got all kinds of things happening this week. Are you guys ready for another John Carpenter album? I feel like that's all he's doing now is just music, which is cool. I'm into it. Have you heard any of his other albums? It's all synthwave, if that's what you call it. It's John Carpenter music, man. You know what I'm talking about. It's not really something. I feel like it's something you could do acid to or something. You know what I'm saying? Not really something you can dance to or like sing along with. Obviously, there's no fucking lyrics. It's like a good thing to have on, maybe during sexy time. I don't know what kind of sexy time you're into. Maybe John Carpenter sexy time. I don't know, man. It's cool. I got one of them. I got his first one that he put out. There's a couple of good tracks on there. You know what? I think it would probably be a good thing to put on in the background while you're doing your homework. And not, that way it doesn't, you know, take you out of, break your concentration or take you out of homework mode because it's just, you know, syntho stuff. That's all it is, dude. It's cool. What I would do is wait till it comes out. It's coming out here next month. And then, I don't know, maybe give it a listen on Spotify and see what you think of that. Or better yet, listen to some of his other albums on Spotify. I'll be honest with you. Now that I think about it, they kind of all sound the same, really. It's all that You know what I'm talking about. I'm doing a terrible John Carpenter music impression, but you know what it how it goes. So yeah, think about that. It's coming up next month. Looks like filming has begun on Final Destination Bloodlines. Why must every horror franchise have an installment called Bloodlines? I don't know. Subspecies, Bloodlines. Hellraiser 4, Bloodlines. I'm sure there's a movie that's just called Bloodlines, right? I don't know. I'm not too excited for this. It's Final Destination. You guys know I'm not a huge Final Destination guy. I don't know what you want from me. I'm not too. I know there's some Final Destination gurus out there that are really pumped for this. Good for you, man. Good for you. I hope this works out well. Not my jam, but I hope it. I hope you dig it. Speaking of not my jam, last week Buddy talked about horror video games that are like a good stepping stone to get your kids into horror video games. We talked about Luigi's Mansion. Luigi's Mansion 2 is hitting Nintendo Switch June 27th. I should probably get a Nintendo Switch, huh? Everybody I know has one. They all swear by them, but dude, I got it all, man. I got the Xbox, I got the PS5, I got the PC, I got the Oculus. I got all these systems. I've got two games that I actually play. Dead by Daylight and Mortal Kombat. That's it. Don't get me started on how many games I have for each one of these fucking things. I probably spent a year's salary just staying stocked up on shit that I'm never going to play. Shit that I think is going to look good on my shelf. I don't think I need Luigi's Mansion. If somebody can give me a good reason to get a Nintendo Switch besides keeping my kids quiet, I might. But what am I going to do with a Nintendo Switch? It's going to go on the shelf with the rest of the games that I don't play. All right, enough about that. What else we have here? Miramax TV is launched. Okay, all right. Now, let's all just take a deep breath before I break this story, because I know it's going to get a lot of your cockles in a bunch. I don't know what cockles are, to be honest with you. Miramax TV is launching a Halloween series. Yes, that Halloween, Michael Myers. Now, I know what you're thinking. As soon as I say Halloween, everybody thinks Halloween ends, and then everybody wants to just punch themselves and probably me in the face. Now, they're calling this a quote-unquote creative reset of the franchise. I don't know what that means exactly. I think that means they're going to start the whole shit over from scratch, which... I mean, that's probably the best. If you had to make a Halloween series, you probably just want to just take it from ground zero, right? Because you clearly can't pick it up anywhere after the John Carpenters or the Rob Zombies or this latest trilogy, the 2018s. I would start over, really. And I don't know. Oh, God, I'm going to give myself a fucking aneurysm thinking about this. I don't know where you go with it other than, I guess if you wanted to, you could mix in a bunch of small town drama. You know, Stephen King it up. That's probably the way to go. Have Mrs. Strode cheat on Mr. Strode with, I don't know, the guy that fucking delivers the mail or something. And then give Laurie Strode like a pregnancy scare. Except you probably can't do that because she's supposed to be a virgin. I don't know what I'm talking about. Just it's going to be a quote unquote creative reset. So you know what I think now that I'm talking about it and words are coming out of my mouth. I think it's too soon for Halloween anything. I think we're all still mad about Halloween Ends, as we should be, and I think we should just take a good 6-7 years off and just not even, you know. Let's not even. Unless you want to do like a, if you want to get really funky with it, do a Halloween series, but base it on Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Get into Colonel Cochran and how he fucking steals stones from Stonehenge, which seems physically impossible to do. And we never really got an explanation for either in that movie. God damn it. All right. Enough about that. Speaking of dumb shit, are you guys ready for Cocaine Werewolf? It is going direct to video on demand later this year by the same people that brought you Cocaine Shark, who are clearly trying to cash a check off of Cocaine Bear. This is stupid, man. This is dumb. This is how we end up with Velocipastor. Say what you will about Velocipastor. It's dumb. It's a dumb movie. There's, other than a half-ass kitschiness to it, I guess, that some people seem to enjoy. Come on, dude. You made a ridiculous, what's her name? Elizabeth Banks made a ridiculous movie that, from what I hear, is actually not as bad as it sounds in Cocaine Bear. And because of that, because she made more than $2 off of it, everybody is now jumping on the Cocaine Bear bandwagon and just trying to make whatever ridiculous drug-animal combination they can come up with. So, yeah, now we're getting hit in the face with Cocaine Werewolf. I'm not going to watch it. I'm not going to watch it, inmates. I'm going to tell you right now. And the reason why is because despite, you know, what a doofus I am, and I fully understand and recognize that I am a doofus. I'm sitting in a room talking to myself right now, for Christ's sakes. I don't want my horror time wasted on Cocaine Werewolf or Cocaine Shark or, what was it, Meth Alligator, I think was another one. Why? Why would I do that? I don't have as much time to watch horror movies as I used to. So, therefore, if I know I'm walking into Cocaine Werewolf, I know it's going to be stupid. I'm going to be mad at the end of the movie. And that's 2 hours or an hour and a half or whatever that I'm of my life that I'm not going to get back. And no, I'm not doing it. I'm going to put my foot down. I'm going to put my foot down right now and say no to Cocaine Werewolf. I implore you all to do the same. All right. That's it on the horror news. I think it's time for some listener mail. I promise I will not be as hostile during the listener mail, or I will at least make an erstwhile effort not to be. Thank you very much.
Listener mail.
Yeah, buddy, we got some emails and some voicemails and some other fun stuff. How about we check out the inbox? Coming all the way from Sydney, Australia, here comes our main man, Team. He's from Dummies from Horror, right? Subject line, you played the wrong Freebird. I know I did that, Tim, and I thought you might enjoy that one also. Really, a nine-minute song is a nine-minute song. What's up, gentlemen? Hope everyone is great and happy this week. Meat Hook, top three Canadian horror films. Number three, Santa Slay, Goldberg is Santa, fuck yeah. Number two, Psycho Goreman. Number one, Tucker and Dale versus Evil. I didn't know that was Canadian. I suppose now that you say that, it does make sense that it would be. Psycho Goreman, that's another good one. I like it. My kids liked it. It's pretty good. It's silly, you know. It's not it's not insultingly silly. It's more like a horror version of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers without the kung fu and the helmets and all that stuff. Although no, I think they do have some helmets and kung fu during the final battle there. But yeah, I'm into it. I'm into Psycho Goreman. Darian, are you the Devil's Rejects? Yes, I am. That was an easy one. I put that in there just for Tom Hardy. You know what's great about that movie? Well, everything but the main thing is that they play Freebird at the end. You know, the real Freebird, not some weird punk rock version of it. But seriously, I fucking love The Devil's Rejects, Rob Zombie's best film, in my opinion. Anyway, that's it for me. Much love to you all. Right on, Tim. I also enjoyed The Devil's Rejects. I don't think that was... You know what, man? I'm going to be honest with you. If I had to pick a number one Rob Zombie movie, just me. This is just me talking. This is just my personal preference. If somebody said, hey, fucker, you got to watch a Rob Zombie movie tonight, but pick anyone you like, I am going to have to go Lords of Salem, dude. That's just my jam. of all of his movies, that I feel like had the least amount of white trashiness in it, except maybe the Munsters. The Munsters was, that's a whole other thing. But, yeah, I go Lords of Salem, but that's just me. I'm not saying that's his best movie. I'm not saying that's his, most successful movie. I'm just saying that's my favorite of, Rob Zombie's. Right on, Tim. Thanks for writing in. Love you too, big guy. Looks like I got some voicemails rolling in here. How about we kick things off with our main man in Alabama, Alan, coming at us.
Padded room, what's up?
What's up, Alan?
Everybody's doing good.
I'm all right.
Let's see, Mr. Darien, your Devil's Reject.
You got me.
Let's see, Meat Hook, Canadian horror film.
Yeah.
That's
it's a tough one.
I guess I'm going to go with Dead Hooker in a Trunk from the Saska. That's one of my favorites. Low budget. Their first one is a lot of fun.
It is.
Let's see, what else? I'm not really a big Cronenberg guy. I don't know why.
I never really
got into him.
I get it.
And once again, I thought I'd get gas. That stupid gas station. Well, they got new pumps working.
Lovely.
Anyway, let's see, what else? Other Canadian horror films. I don't know. I'm just going to go with all the Saska stuff.
Okay, that's fine.
Because I like all of them. American Mary.
Rabid.
As far as, like, the last movie they did, they've done something else that hasn't come out yet. It's called, I forget the name of it, but it's something about, like, a dominatrix.
Ooh.
Satan.
Okay.
Anyway, that's all I got. Y'all have a good one. Talk to y'all later.
You've got my attention, Saska twins. As if you didn't already. What do you got? You got Rabid, you got Dead Hooker in a Trunk, you got your American Mary, See No Evil 2, that weirdo elevator game show. They were the hosts of a game show on Sci-Fi for a hot second. It was pretty stupid, man. They put people in an elevator and you go up and down. I don't think I ever watched it, or maybe I did. I don't. It was like 10 years ago. I am interested in this dominatrix situation, whatever that is. Sounds hot. I like the Rabid remake. I just felt like it was a little heavy on the fashionista drama, which is, it's a different story. I get it. In the original Rabid, Cronenberg's girl gets experimented on, and then she breaks out of the facility, and then she's on the run after that. In the remake, there's a whole buildup, the accident, the facility, we get that. But then she like just goes back to work for a while, which is kind of wacky. Anyway, I'm not going to bore you with the details. I'm sure you've seen it. It's a good show either way. They both are. As far as Cronenberg goes, Alan, since you bring him up, I get why he can be a tough pill to swallow. And I think his son, Brandon Cronenberg, I think, he's got the same issue. He starts off with a solid premise, but then he always ends up trying to take it into, like, James Bond territory. I think the best, there's many examples of that. The best possible example of that is, Videodrome. Where Max Wren is suddenly trying to infiltrate the videotape cult. And, you know, somebody's watching him, but he's watching them and back and forth. And then he's got to assassinate Professor Brian Oblivion. It gets very James Bondy. Same thing happened in Scanners. What else? Not so much with the Shivers. Maybe a little bit, now that I think about it, with Shivers, but not as bad. Shivers was just a goddamn fuckfest. There's nothing wrong with that, because Lynn Lowry was in that when she was still at the height of her hotness. Right on, Alan. Thanks for calling in, man. See who we got next here on the mental health hotline. It looks like we're going to beautiful Southern California. Here comes Mr. Tom Hardy. Oh, Jesus, dogs. Hey-yo!
Hey-yo! Padded Room, how's my favorite degenerates this week?
I'm here.
I do hope everyone is doing well in the game real quick.
Yeah.
Check in with you guys on the educating department.
Come on now, Tom Hardy.
You got the Devil's Reject.
You got me. You did it.
Of all the fucking scenes, Darren, you choose the banjo player scene. What the fuck that? You got issues, brother.
I do.
Anyway, yeah, I got to catch a couple of flicks.
Okay.
One of them I really wanted to get your thoughts on. I caught The Pope's Exorcist.
Okay.
And,
I saw it.
I hadn't seen it. Everybody was talking shit, said it wasn't good, it sucked, all this crap. Man, I saw it. I thought it was fucking good. I thought it was fun, dude. I thought it was a good Exorcist flick.
You like that, huh?
It's definitely better than the new Exorcist Believer.
Yeah, but that's not saying much.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I thought it was a good flick. I know some people were talking shit about the main guy's accent. Oh,
yeah.
You know, he couldn't keep... Who gives a fuck, man? It's a horror flick, man. I don't know. I thought it was a pretty good flick. I don't know why people were talking trash on it.
Okay.
Whatever. I also got to catch that... what is it, The Cabin in the Woods?
Yeah.
Love that flick. It was on,
it's a classic.
I think, Prime or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh, fuck, man, I got to see this shit again.
Of course.
And, yeah, oh, on the Meat Hooks, man, what do we got?
Coming Canadian.
Out of fucking Canada. You know what? I didn't know exactly how to go on this, so I'm a slashers guy. I
sure.
Love the 80s, so I just went with slashers from Canada from the 80s.
Okay.
So,
I feel like
number
you're
three,
Googling
down
it right
for
now.
Terror Train.
Okay.
Good one. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis. It's a good flick.
Not
it's
a bad
fun,
show.
You know?
Yeah.
You know what it is. But
of course.
Number two, Black Christmas.
Yeah,
the original,
classic.
Of course. Fucking, it's a good flick.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of started the slasher craze genre, whatever.
Some
but,
people like to think
I don't know.
That.
And then, you know, number one's got to be, and this is actually one of my favorite flicks.
Huh.
Just in general, let alone, you know, Canadian 80s slasher, and that'd be My Bloody Valentine.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know when the last time you've seen
forgot
it was.
I forgot that was Canadian.
That's just a fucking good flick.
It is.
Man. It's just a fun flick. And one of the things that really surprised me about it is, you know, it's a slasher, but he's not chasing, you know, fucking teeny bopper kids. He's,
no.
You know, chasing blue-collar
coal miners.
Workers.
Yeah,
and you just don't see that a lot, you know, in a horror movie, especially a slasher or a slasher. You know, it's normally, you know, high school teenager type shit.
That's true.
So, it's pretty unique in that sense.
He got GP'd. I completely forgot that My Bloody Valentine was Canadian. That's a good show, dude. He makes a good point about the victims not being high school kids. It's always better when the victims look like they could possibly kick the ass of the slasher. That gives it like an extra edge. You know what I'm saying? And anytime they go into the mines, dude, fuck, stay the fuck out of mines. I'm in northern Nevada right now, okay? You step outside my back door, throw a rock in any direction, and you will hit an open mine shaft. This is Silver Country that I'm broadcasting from. Virginia City is a stone's throw away. That place was basically built on top of one giant mine, the Comstock Load. There's just open holes and shafts all over the desert up here. Stay the fuck out of there, dude. Why would you go in there if you're not a miner? If there's not like some safety equipment involved. I get it. In the movie, there's a lot of young ladies taking the coal miners into the mines at night to have sex. I'll tell you, ladies, I'm a horny guy, and I will get down with you, but I'm not going to risk falling into a 300-foot mine shaft that I'm not going to survive or ever be pulled out of just to get my ding-dong played with. You understand that? I'll bang you in the back of a car. I'll bang you in a hotel room. We can go to your place, wherever you want. Mine shaft, maybe not so much. And don't even get me started on the fucking creepy crawlies that you find in those things. It is a thing. Anybody that's been to the northern Nevada area will tell you, stay out of the mines, for real. He called back. G motherfucking P, baby.
G motherfucking P.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. But I don't know. It's a slasher. It's a whodunit. If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. I remember not liking the remake very much.
I thought it was okay.
I wanted the original again. Yeah. So I might have to give the remake another chance. I remember hearing it's not that bad and
it's
thinking, I don't know about that.
It's all right.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try it again.
All right.
Anyway, I think that's all I got. Hope all is well. Love you like family. I got to go pipe jacket, so I'll catch you later.
Right on. Go go have fun with the pie whacket, buddy. Right on, Tom Marty. Thanks for calling in, man. Yeah, dude. I think that probably there are more movies out there that are like sneakily Canadian that we are unaware of, or we just don't think of as Canadian. You know what I mean? Canada is a big part of our horror lineage, inmates. Great actors and directors and writers have come out of Canada. And they also brought us maple syrup. So there's that. Darian, you're going to lose your entire Canadian listening base. I already have. Don't worry about it. I'm a Vegas Golden Knights fan. So we'll see you guys later. All right, I think it's time to get into a movie here. Yeah, let's do that.
In the quiet town of Eastwick, where nothing ever changes, three beautiful women are about to discover powers they never dreamed they had.
Who should we be looking for? He should be really handsome. Nice eyes.
Now, the man of their dreams is here.
Shane, last we meet.
To stay for a spell.
Who are you?
Just your average horny little devil.
With the witches of Eastwick,
we could do things you haven't any idea.
You know what's going on up in that house?
She says she sees the devil here in Eastwick.
If you were the devil, would you come to Eastwick?
Oh, I don't know.
Are you going to seduce me too?
Or did he do it to us on purpose?
Jack Nicholson, Cher, Susan Sarandon, Michelle Pfeiffer. The Witches of Eastwick.
Hocus pocus.
Yeah, it's the Witches of Eastwick, inmates. Buddy picked this movie, not me. And then he didn't even fucking show up. So there's that. God damn it. God damn it, buddy! Why do you hate me? It's rated R. It's written by John Updike. Directed by George Miller. Got 6.5 stars on IMDb. Stars, of course, Jack Nicholson, Michelle Pfeiffer, Cher, and Susan Sarandon. You've probably seen this one, inmates, from 1987. So it's been around. It's made the rounds. Everybody's seen it on pay-per-view or something. It's a comedy, is what it is. There's very little horror involved. There's some witchcrafty type of things, but all in all, this is a comedy. It's a romantic comedy, I would even call it. We start off in the small town of Eastwick. I assume it's somewhere in Massachusetts, because that would make the most sense, witches and all. Small town, picturesque, you know, everybody goes to church on Sundays. Everybody goes to the same school. It's great. Oh boy. I told you it was coming. God damn it. All right. Anyway, we've got three ladies and we're going to spend some time with these three ladies. We start off in some kind of a, I guess it's a town function, a big assembly. The school band is performing. The first lady that we're going to meet is Alex, played by Cher. The whole 80s, Cher was pretty hot, right? I mean, she had a nice body. Always doing weird stuff with her hair, though, which is, it can be a bit distracting. So there's that. She played in this particular iteration of Cher. She's playing Alex, who is a sculptor. She basically just makes figurines and sells them at a local curio shop. I don't know how she's paying her bills, really. We're going to find out in a little bit that her husband has died, and that's why she's single. She has a teenage daughter that seems pretty cool. She's going to school and stuff. They live alone, and that's basically what she does. She just makes a whole bunch of these sculptures, sells them in the local antique shop, and somehow manages to pay the bills that way. All right, this is the 80s. We can just write that off and assume that somehow it works. Her friend, Jane, is the music teacher at the school. Jane is played by Susan Sarandon. I feel like Susan Sarandon is hot on paper, especially in the 80s. You know, Bull Durham, this one, of course, other movies that don't immediately come to mind. But for some reason, she is just, I just don't find her attractive. I don't know why. I think maybe it's the hair. I don't know. I don't know. I understand there were movies that she was in where she was screaming hot. I just was never that crazy about her myself. I don't know why. Anyway, she plays the music teacher, Jane. She teaches music at the school. We get them rehearsing for this big town assembly that's coming up. They're going to play the Star Spangled Banner to kick things off. She's going to get sexually harassed by the school principal, a guy by the name of Walter. And we also find out that Jane is recently divorced. Unfortunately, she was divorced because she is unable to have kids. And I guess that was a deal breaker for the husband. So she is now free. The principal knows that. So he comes up and gets himself a handful of her tushy. And he's like, yeah, you keep practicing. Maybe later we can put our heads together and figure something out. All right, you fucking scumbag, get out of here. But Jane is, at this point in the movie, very mousy. She's got the big glasses and always wears her hair in a braid and wears big baggy clothes. Very cool. And then we're going to meet our third young lady, played by Michelle Pfeiffer. This is Sookie. I don't know what Sookie... Please tell me your parents didn't name you Sookie, because you're basically advertising your daughter for oral sex, if that is the case. If it's a nickname, that's great. I would like to know what Sookie is short for, but in the meantime, I don't know. Her name is Sookie. Gross. She's got five daughters, and she is also recently divorced, and she is divorced because she has too many kids. Which seems like a shit thing to do, but we just have to go with that. Sookie is raising all five daughters by, or six, actually, daughters by herself, and trying to get everybody to school and back, and she's also a reporter for the local paper, so she's got a job on top of that, so everything is very hectic in Sookie's life as she's trying to navigate singleness, I guess. Anyway, we're going to cut to the morning of the big assembly. It's great. It's boring as shit. Walter is giving his big speech after the band does their rendition of America the Beautiful, I think. And all three women are there, and they're just staring at Walter as he drones on and on. And they're both looking up at the sky, wishing that the assembly would just be done and over with so they could get on with their lives, because they're bored to tears, as is everybody in the crowd. Walter is not a public speaker, and he is literally standing behind a podium reading word from word a bunch of shit that he wrote. Now, I'm not exactly what you call an orator, inmates, you know that, but I like to think that I can at least project a little bit. He's basically up there giving a reading of very dry, boring material. We're going to, through the little snippets of his speech, we're going to learn a little history about Eastwick. It was founded by the Lennox family. They basically bought a huge plot of land and then invited a bunch of friends to come stay on it. And then those friends had kids, and then so on and so forth. And now we have the town of Eastwick. And the Lennox Mansion, which was theirs, is sitting on top of a hill not too far away and has been abandoned, but declared a historical landmark and is thus kind of like being preserved. Very cool. This is the part where the girls decide that it's just shut the fuck up, Walter. Will you just shut up and let us go home? They're all staring up at the sky, wishing for something to end this. And that's when we see the clouds slowly coming together. And then the breeze picks up a little bit. And then it gets windier. And then the clouds come together even more. Before you know it, the sky is gray. And now here comes thunder and lightning. And then a downpour. And everybody gets to run back to their houses and cars. Thus ending the Eastwick Town Assembly speech. I don't know. I don't know what the fucking point of that was. All right, so that's cool. Now we're going to find out that every Thursday night, these three young ladies, who are apparently best friends, get together for a little ladies' night snack binge margarita tasting situation. It's great. They all come together at Alex's studio and get hammered and basically talk shit about people there in the town. It's fun. It's good for them. They do this every Thursday night, apparently. Good for them. Sookie brings something up. She's like, oh, you know, I was looking up at the sky wishing Walter would shut his mouth. And Alex is like, yeah, me too. I was thinking if it would just, the weather would change, maybe we could get out of here. And Jane is like, yeah, you know, I was looking up at the sky thinking the same thing, if we could get like some rain or something. And then Sookie's like, hey, dudes, when all three of us think about something, it kind of happens. How cool is that? And everybody just kind of blows her off with, ah, Sookie, you're crazy. Okay, and then we get a bunch of gossip about the town. It's fine. Right before Walter took the stage there at the assembly, we got to meet Felicia Alden and her husband, Clyde Alden. Now, Clyde runs the newspaper, and Felicia is a selectman. I don't know what the hell that means. It's one of these useless public officers that does probably nothing, but driving around Reno, there's always campaign signs, elect this guy for district selectman. What the fuck is a district selectman? You get to select things? Is that your job? What qualifications are necessary for that? Probably zero. And that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I hereby announce my candidacy for district selectman. I don't know. I don't know what they do. I don't know what the point of that is, but she is a selectman there. Her name is Felicia. Also has a wonderful singing voice. She sings while the band plays. That's going to come into play in a minute. So that night, as the thunder and lightning is going on and the three ladies are together getting hammered and eating Cheetos, they're like, okay, let's talk about we're all single now. Your divorce just went through. So what kind of a man are we looking for? And they basically start thinking about what their ideal man would be. Alex is like, well, he needs to be honest. If he could just be honest and we could have an honest conversation. And Jane is like, yeah, and he needs like a fairly average penis because I don't want a big one, but I don't want a small one. And Sookie's like, yeah, and he needs to be good with kids too because I'm sick of raising these kids all by myself. What they don't realize is that when the three of them get together and like put these ideas out, they come true. So as they're having that conversation, we see the Rolls Royce pulling into town through the thunderstorm and go right up to the Lennox Mansion, where we see somebody get out of the car and run inside through the rain. Cut to the next morning. Everybody's hungover, and we have Sookie with big news calling Alex and Jane. Hey, did you hear? Somebody just bought the Lennox Mansion. Oh, my God. What's his name? I don't know, but he's single. That's all I know, and he's from New York, and he's got a lot of money. It's so cool. So everybody's like, yeah, okay, this is a new guy in town. That's weird. We don't get a lot of new guys. About that time, Alex goes to the antique shop, and she's like, hey, man, you sell any of my pregnant lady statues? And the lady that owns the antique store is like, yeah, sold them all. She's like, what? She's like, yeah, I went months without anybody even looking at one of those things. And then the new guy rolls into town and he buys all of them. Crazy, huh? And she's like, yeah, the new guy, huh? Yeah, nobody can remember his name to start with. Yeah, he had a weird foreign name and he was kind of, dashingly handsome. Now, about that. I don't know. Ladies, let's be honest. Is Jack Nicholson handsome? Circa 1987, when he was probably in his early 50s, late 40s, early 50s, I'd say. I don't know. You tell me. He doesn't strike me as a classically handsome dude, but I could be wrong. I have no measuring stick as to what would or wouldn't be attractive as far as quote-unquote handsome is. So I don't know. You tell me. But she's going on about what a hottie he was, and he just came in there and bought all the pregnant lady statues. Alex is like, oh, well, okay, then, fuck me. That's interesting. I'll have to thank him if I ever see him. And she's the lady's like, oh, yeah, he's making his rounds. He's going all over the place. So, all right, from there, we get back to Alex, who is like, you know what? I'm going to take my little 10-speed here. And I'm going to ride up there to the Lennox Mansion, and I'm going to say, hey, I'm the sculptor, and thank you for buying all my sculptures, because I don't sell a lot of those fucking things. So she gets on her bike with her coveralls on and her poofy pigtails and goes riding up there. She gets about halfway up there, and he just kind of appears behind her. And he's like, hey, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, I'm... was going up to the mansion. He's like, there's a whole controversy about the mansion because he's renovating it and he's filling in wetland and there's a rare bird there that is going to have to go fuck itself, I guess, find a new habitat. So apparently that wetland is not protected. So that's just what they're going to do. And he bought the land so he can just do whatever the hell he wants with it. I don't know that that's how things actually work, but that's got Felicia and Clyde in an uproar because Felicia really likes that particular breed of rare bird, whatever the hell. So he's out there trying to find the rare bird. It's like a snowy sapling or some shit. He's like, have you seen any snowy saplings? And she's like, no, they're usually not around this time of year. They come back in the winter. And he's like, oh, all right, well, I wouldn't know a snowy sapling if I saw one, so I'll just take your word for it. And then just being kind of like extra Jack Nicholson, he introduces himself. His name is Daryl Van Horn, and he is he's the one that bought the place, and he's there, and he's being extra Jack Nicholson. He's like, well, you know what the problem with men is? It's that they're too busy worried about losing their hard-ons. How do you like that? And I think the idea was that she was supposed to be taken aback somehow by his crude honesty. He's like, hey, come on back with me. We'll have lunch. We're going to have fish. And she's like, okay. So she just kind of follows him back to his house. They have a very nice fish lunch situation. And then he gives her a tour of the house, in which there's all these renovations and construction crews running around. He's like, now this is what I'm talking about. I got the new chandelier going in. I got a pool going in over there. Why keep all the old stuff? It's all horse shit. And then he takes her up to the bedroom and just starts taking his clothes off. And he's like, so do you like to be on top or on bottom? And she's like, you're disgusting. I'm getting the hell out of here. But then he lays more of his extra Jack Nicholson-y rap on her, and she just turns around and starts making out with him. And you have to assume that they have sex. Well done. I don't think that rap would work on anybody ever. Especially, maybe if you're Jack Nicholson. I'll give him that. But here's the real thing. At one point during this diatribe, he takes his shirt off. He is not in very good shape. And I don't know. I could be completely wrong. Maybe some chicks are just into pudgy old dudes. Anyway, now we cut to sometime later that week. Jane has a big recital, and her and the string quartet are playing a concert in the town assembly hall or whatever the hell. And the whole town is there. Sookie and Alex are there to encourage Jane, and she plays the cello. So she's up there strumming away with her quartet, and they're banging away. And out of nowhere, you hear loud, obnoxious snoring coming from the back of the room. And we cut back there, of course, and there's Daryl sprawled out in the back row, sound asleep, snoring like a polar bear. disrupting the whole show. And when the show, the concert is finally over, he tips back in his chair and like startles himself awake. But then he gets up and gives her a very obnoxious round of applause and bravo, brava, and all that. So very cool. Then we cut back to Jane, maybe the next night or so, practicing her cello. And she's having problems with a certain string configuration, I guess. And there's a knock on the door, and sure as shit, it is Daryl Van Horn. And he's like, good evening. And he's got a violin with him. Is that a turn on, ladies? Guy shows up with a violin. Do I need to buy a violin? I don't think it's going to get me anywhere, because I wouldn't know the first fucking thing to do with it, but I'm willing to try. Anyway, he's like giving her all these pointers about how better to play the cello, and you need to relax and let the music tickle you. Whatever the fuck that means. You're playing too hard. You got to just let it flow, and being a real douche nozzle with it. But of course, she's eating this shit up. And then he's like, okay. Now, and then he like kneels down in front of her and spreads her legs. And then he puts the cello between her legs. And then she starts playing. And then he starts playing the piano behind her to back her up. And she's like having an orgasm. And there's steam and smoke coming out of the cello. Because I guess that's a thing. And they're like going back and forth, piano, cello, piano, cello. Eventually, they get to the end of the song. And he's like, yes! And she throws the cello down and jumps on him. And then the cello catches fire because, yeah, Daryl Van Horn. So that's great. You got to imagine that they most likely had sex right there on the spot. Cut to the next morning. Alex is very excited to finally introduce Sookie to Daryl. So she's like, hey, let's get on our 10 speeds and ride up to Daryl's place. You're going to love this guy. You wanted to interview him for the paper anyway. Now, while all that's going on, we have Felicia Alden going crazier and crazier. And after the recital, Sookie's pearls broke and she fell down some stairs and broke her leg. So now she's in the hospital and she's all doped up. But she keeps going on about how there is evil in Eastwick and it's infecting the town to the core. And it started with whoever bought the Lennox Mansion. And it needs to be rooted out, and she's really just going fucking crazy. And I don't know who the actress was that played that chick, but she plays crazy well. She's got crazy blue eyes. It's like foaming at the mouth, too. Fucking freaking everybody out. Anyway, that's pretty gnarly. So now we go to the Van Horn Mansion. And here comes Sookie and Alex rolling up. She's going to introduce Alex to Daryl. And Alex is going to introduce Sookie to Daryl. And Sookie's going to get the big interview she's been hoping for. They get there, and Jane is already there. And she's now like... It's that part in the movie where the nerdy chick that nobody... pays any mind to is suddenly sluttied up and now she's screaming hot. That's where we went with Susan Sarandon. I wouldn't say she's sluttied up, but she's not wearing her glasses. So that's all. In 1987, that's all it really took. You just got to take the glasses off and let the hair down. So she gets there and like, oh, hi, Jane. How are you? And she's like, oh, hi, ladies. Are you here to fix the plumbing? And a little snarky there, but then Daryl jumps in. He's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's all be friends here. No need to get angry. There's plenty of Daryl to go around. Let's go play some tennis. So they go around the back of the house where the tennis courts are, and they start playing tennis. And we get a cute little situation here where they're, you know, serving the ball at each other because they're all being very snarky and possessive of Daryl. But then... we go into supernatural mode, and the ball starts moving in slow motion, and it goes way up in the sky, and it hangs there for like 15 seconds before it drops. And then it goes like around and around, and then there's like a slow motion thing, and Susan Sarandon gets to stop and tie her shoes and then hit the ball and then get up. It's very cute. It's very, very, very intelligent use of witchcraft, I guess, playing a slow motion game of tennis. Whatever, man. Whatever you're into. Afterward, they go inside, and we get a... they have a, he's got an indoor pool, and they're all, you know, swimming around in the pool, and they've got their floaties out, and we get a little one-on-one with Sookie and Daryl, and she's like, are you going to seduce me? And he's like, yep. And she's like, well, I get pregnant easy. And he's like, okay. And she's like, that doesn't bother you? Nope. Okay, let's go ahead and get me pregnant then. This is how dialogue worked in pretty much the entire 80s. All you had to do, apparently, was declare to a young lady that you intended to, quote-unquote, seduce her. Now, I'm not one to speak on the art of seduction, but I would like to assume that you don't want to announce that intention up front. You know what I mean? Hey, I'm going to seduce you. Okay. If she doesn't run away, then you're pretty much already there. Am I wrong? I don't know. I was all of 9 years old when this movie came out, so I didn't understand it then. I'm still not sure I understand it, but yeah, all right. So from there, we have to assume that Jane and Alex just fuck off for a little bit, and Daryl bangs the bottom out of Sookie. Well done. From there, we get like a lot of we kind of go into montage mode for about 10-15 minutes. A lot of, you know, them partying at the mansion. All four of them. They're all up there hanging. Daryl's got his manservant, a guy named Fidel, who is played by Lurch. So there's that. He's kind of running around and trying to keep the place clean and shit. What's her name? Sookie brings all the girls up, all of her kids, and they do like a balloon party. And there's a pretty cool little thing of Daryl pushing the three ladies around on one of those room service carts through the balloons, which I guess is okay. But at one point, he launches Jane through the doors on the room service cart, and she should have toppled into the pool because I guess the pool's right next door. But instead, she just floats up into the air and grabs a chandelier. And then the other two ladies come running in, and they laugh at her for a few minutes. And then they start floating up also. And then, holy shit, we can fly. No. Now, as cool as that is, you would think that would warrant some discussion. Remember that time we all flew through the pool? And Daryl's down there just laughing. There's no mention of that at all whatsoever throughout the rest of the movie. It's just, hey, we're flying now. Look at this. We're up here above the pool, and we're all flying around and stuff. And then Daryl gets distracted for a second, and then they all fall into the pool and get wet, and that's even more fun, I guess. But that would be cause for panic for me. If all of a sudden I started floating off into the room, number one, how did I do that? Number two, can I control when and how I did that? Number three, how do I prevent, if I can't control it, how do I prevent myself from doing it like outside and just floating off into the atmosphere? You know what I'm saying? Maybe I'm just like a neurotic type, but those are the type of things that would concern me about the flying through the air episode that we had together, me and you. I don't know, man. All right, it's fine. Whatever, dude. This is a comedy, so we're going to have to waive that. This is where things get a little nutty, because the next day, newspaper comes out, and it's like, scandal at the Lennox Mansion. And it basically tells the story of how these three single moms are spending a lot of time up at the Lennox Mansion, and Daryl Van Horn is kind of a shady character. And basically, it turns the entire town against the three ladies. So that's kind of creepy. They're like, oh, God, what? And then, like, we get a shot of Susan Sarandon going to the store, and everybody's side-eyeing her and calling her a slut, so she leaves. And then, what's her name? Sookie gets fired from the newspaper, and Clyde, played by a young Richard Jenkins, by the way, Clyde explains that, you know, he didn't want to write the story or publish it, but Felicia's dad runs the or owns the paper, so he's got to kind of do whatever she says. And she is really anti-Daryl Horn, and she's getting even crazier and crazier. So the three ladies go back to Daryl and report this, and they're trying to figure out how to, you know, make the situation better. And they come up with the idea that Felicia just needs to fucking go away. So as they're having this conversation, Daryl's feeding them cherries and having them spit the pits. I don't know where they were spitting them, to tell you the truth. They were just kind of like hawking them, you know? Real attractive, by the way. Nasty. The whole time they're having this conversation, Daryl's like, have another cherry. Go ahead, have another cherry. Now we cut to the Alden house where Richard, God bless, or Clyde, God bless his soul, is like, honey, honey, will you just calm down? And now Felicia has gone full on possibly demonic possession mode on us. She's like rubbing her pussy and like, oh, that's how they get in. It's like there's a man and he just wants to be inside him. And, and she's rubbing her fucking pussy. And she just starts randomly vomiting up cherry pits. Starts with one, then five or six, then seven or eight. Then she's projectile vomiting all over the house. And Richard is like, honey, can we just go to bed? And she's, no, those bitches are harlots. We have to remove them. They should be burned at the stake. Richard's like, honey, it's time for bed. And then he grabs a fire poker and I believe bludgeons her to death. And that is the one and only kill that we get in this movie. Cut to the next day. All three ladies are standing outside the Alden residence as the body is being loaded into a coroner's van and Richard is being, Richard Jenkins, Clyde is being taken away in handcuffs. And they're like, what the fuck happened here? They come to the conclusion, as Sookie stated, when the three of them get together and decide they want the same thing, it just kind of happens. Daryl kind of egged on the process and, you know, got them the whole cherry pit thing. Whatever he did, like, amplified it. So now they're like, oh, shit. I didn't want to kill her, but I didn't want her to be here. I just wanted her to shut the fuck up. We got to get away from Daryl. Daryl's dangerous. So they decide that they are not going to see Daryl for a while. And I don't think they actually told him that. I think they just cold turkeyed his ass, which is unfortunate and not really fair for Daryl. And, you know, he might just be a rich dude at this point. He might just be a rich dude that is polyamorous and likes taking care of single moms. There's nothing wrong with that. If they're into it and he's into it. But, of course, they decide to ghost him because, you know, they think that he somehow facilitated the killing of Felicia, which isn't exactly untrue. So, that being said, they cold turkey him. He's, like, at home wondering what the fuck he did that was so wrong. He finally manages to get a hold of Alex, and Alex is like, you know, Daryl, I just need some time, and I would appreciate it if you just gave me some space. And then she hangs up on him, and he's like, why are you hanging up on me? I didn't do anything wrong. He's all fired off. One thing I didn't mention is that they made a little videotape, and each one of the ladies had to tell Daryl their greatest fear. Right about this time, Jane gets the news that she is pregnant. Woo, daddy. She wasn't supposed to be able to have kids. Remember that? And she's pregnant, and she's all excited to go tell Daryl that he's about to be a dad. She was probably the most into Daryl of the three women. She goes running up to the mansion there and has Fidel let her in. She's being all sneaky with it. Goes up and she sees Daryl like watching the videotape of them all telling their deepest fears. Her fear was getting old and wasting away. So she's like sneaking up on him as he's watching the video, and suddenly her hands get all old and withered, and then she turns into a little old lady, and then she just turns around and runs right out because she's freaking out and panicking. Cut to Alex across town. Her fear was snakes. So naturally, Cher wakes up in a bed full of snakes, and they're slithering all over her, and it's very scary. Luckily, though, what's her name? Jane, having just had her episode, hauls ass over to, Alex's place and kind of snaps her out of it just as she's running out of the house because she thinks it's filled with snakes. So that's great. Now they're both frantically trying to call Sookie because her greatest fear was terrible pain. So, of course, Sookie now is like, withering away. Like, she's got, like, facial sores and stuff, and there's vaginal bleeding, and they can't figure out why. So she's naturally in a lot of pain. The girls get there and rush her to the hospital. The doctors manage to slow down the bleeding, but they can't stop it, and they can't figure out why she's still bleeding. So, Alex, being the smartest of the three, she's like, okay, clearly, old numbnuts up on the hill has something to do with this, so let me go and see what I can do. I'll talk to him. Maybe he knows how to fix it or whatever. So she goes up there, and she's like, Daryl, what the hell are you doing to us? And he's like, doing to you? What did you do to me? We had a great thing going on, and everybody just stops returning my calls. Fuck you guys. And she's like, we didn't want to, but you killed Felicia. And he's like, I didn't kill her. You guys did. You guys are witches, in case you didn't know. And you thinking about getting her out of the picture just kind of made it happen. That's what you do. You're a fucking witch. And she's like, well, how do we stop whatever's happening to Sookie? And he's like, oh, I can help with that. But you're going to have to, we're going to have to get back together, all four of us. So Alex is like, yeah, all right. So they start making out and presumably have sex again. And then Sookie is magically all better. Well done, Alex. Take one for the team, why don't you? Okay, so at this point, Sookie gets out of the hospital. She makes a full recovery, and she's looking much better. I'm going to tell you right now, inmates, of these three ladies, circa 1987, if I had to bang one, it would probably be Michelle Pfeiffer. Especially here towards the end when she gets all gussied up with her glasses and stuff, screaming hot. I was never really that into the other two to begin with. Anyway, she gets out of the hospital. They all reconcile with Daryl, and we get another little party montage of all three of them showing up at his house in their evening gowns. And then drinking and dancing and dinner and more drinking and more dancing. And then they all go up to the bedroom and they're all sprawled out on Daryl's bed in their lingerie. Very hot. And then Daryl goes in and we have to assume that there is some lesbian acts committed. I like to think that somebody got a finger in the butt. At some point in that very romantic evening, possibly some fisting went down. Can I make this any dirtier? I hope so. Anyway, cut to the next morning. The ladies wake up satisfied, and Daryl's like, Fidel, we're going into town. We need bagels and ice cream because the ladies are craving it. So Fidel gets in the Rolls Royce, and Daryl gets in, and they go to town. As soon as they leave, the ladies hop up and start plotting their revenge. And they find a book. I have to assume that they already knew that the book was there because they ran right to it and somehow managed to get it right out of the case that it was in. It's like in a protective Lucite case or something. The title of the book was Maleficio or something like that. Some kind of a grimoire is what I would say. They start feverishly flipping through it while Daryl's out of town, and they get the idea of how to banish Daryl, I guess, is what we're doing. So they make a wax figure of him, complete with a penis. They put a bunch of hair and pictures and other shit, and they burn it, and then they put the ashes in the wax figure. And then what they have basically at that point is a voodoo doll. Cut to Daryl, who's in town getting their bagels and ice cream. And suddenly they throw feathers on the voodoo doll. And Daryl starts coughing up feathers. And he's getting frustrated because he's like, what are you doing, ladies? Girls, I know what you're doing. He knows exactly what's going on. He's like, no, stop. But then they like slide the wax doll down the hallway. So he goes rolling down the street, and then they blow on the wax doll. So it's all windy all of a sudden, but only for Daryl, and there's feathers everywhere. Basically, he takes a pretty good ass-kicking. At some point, he gets blown into the church, where we get a very Jack Nicholson monologue about how women are just sent here to punish men, and, you know, why would anybody want one in their life, because it's nothing but trouble and all this horse shit. And they're stabbing the voodoo doll with needles and stuff. Eventually, Daryl finally gets out of the church after he gets done venting, gets back in the car, leaves Fidel in town, and goes hauling ass back to his house. Again, the girls are throwing the voodoo doll around, so Daryl's getting bounced around inside of his car and doing a bunch of damage. And then eventually he gets back to the house. The girls are frantically cleaning up just in case the voodoo doll didn't work, which it clearly did. He gets into his house and he's all beat to shit and bloody, and he's like, "Ladies!" It's a very, very Jack Torrance moment. "What are you doing? Give me the bat, Wendy!" He's running around, and they're like playing hot potato with the voodoo doll, and at one point it falls down and breaks into like three or four pieces. So from that point, Daryl just kind of vanishes, but then he goes into Super Daryl mode, which is particularly dumb. He turns into like a giant naked Jack Nicholson ogre, and he's like stalking around the outside of the mansion, and they're like, "Oh shit, what do we do now?" So they grab up the pieces, the remaining pieces of the voodoo doll, and they just throw it into a fire, and then like a big wind thing happens, and it's not like an explosion, but he just kind of vanishes, and then he turns into what I can only describe as mealworm Jack Nicholson, and he's just kind of like dangling from a tree, and he's like harmless, and he's like, "Me, me, 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 me," and the girls just kind of walk up to him and poke him, and then he kind of vanishes. And then we cut to 18 months later. The girls have apparently assumed ownership of the Lennox Mansion, and they're all living there with their fire team of kids, and everybody is happily ever after. They, of course, were all three pregnant, and they gave birth to three boys, and the boys are, you know, farting around in their diapers, and Jack Nicholson comes on the TVs, and he's like, "Hey, kids, it's me, it's your old man, come over here, let me talk to you, you're good boys, I can see that." And then Susan Sarandon walks up with a remote and turns the TV off. And that, my friends, was The Witches of Eastwick. It's fine. I'm not a big fan myself, and the reason why is because it's a comedy. It's not a horror movie. It's kind of fun, the idea of these witches in the small town accidentally conjuring this playboy millionaire to come and service all three of them. Circa 1987, you could have done a lot better than Jack Nicholson. I would have went with like a Tom Selleck. He seems more attractive. I don't know if he could play off, has the acting chops to do a Daryl Van Horn. I don't know, man. It's to me, it's very silly. You know, and there's a lot of things that just don't make a lot of sense. For example, why would Clyde murder Felicia with a fire poker? Why would he not just call the hospital or the cops, just have her removed from the house? Clearly, she's vomiting cherry pits at a machine gun rate. What that's cause for alarm. Why are we jumping right to murder? I don't know. This is based on a book by John Updike. I have to assume, again, inmates, that the book is much better than the movie. I don't know that I'm actually going to read this one. All right. That was The Witches of Eastwick. It's streaming on Prime if you're interested. I'm sure you've already seen it. Check it out if you want to. I say you could probably skip it. I'm going to take myself a little break here, inmates. I'll be back with some other stuff. We'll be right back.
Hey, inmates. If you like what you hear, head over to the Padded Room Facebook group and support us through the patron link with a small monthly donation. Check out the T-Villain link at paddedroom.podbean.com and grab some t-shirts. Thanks for listening and enjoy the rest of the show.
And I am back. Thank you very much for that. Yes, ma'am, or sir, whatever you identify as. Well, I'm glad that we got, we were going to have to do the Witches of Eastwick at some point. I'm glad it's finally out of the way. You know what I mean? It wasn't something I was looking forward to, but it's out there. We're in Witch Month here in the Padded Room Podcast, so we're going to be doing witches for the rest of March. And there it is. It's done. It's over with. Let's move on, and let's continue our relationship in an amicable fashion, is what I say. And I also say it's time for a meat hook.
Three on a meat hook.
This week's meat hook, carefully crafted by me for you, small town horror. Now, I have carefully crafted my meat hook, but I've given myself the limitation of only including one Stephen King adaptation. I'm not saying you have to do that. That's just the way that I went, because you could easily put three small-town horror movies, all from Stephen King, in your meat hook. And if you choose to do so, that's fine. I'm only letting myself pick one. So, starting it off with number three, a movie that's very near and dear to my heart. The jumpstart of a franchise that in latter years left us very disappointed. I'm talking, of course, about Scream. The town of Woodboro. Now, is it a small town? I believe so. You know, the phrase that keeps getting tossed around, especially in the first Scream, is that this doesn't happen in Woodboro. Nothing ever happens in Woodboro. And that kind of lends itself to the shock and awe of the kids. But more to the point, when you take a slasher story and you put it in a small town, you remove a lot of the crime-solving elements. You're stuck with Deputy Dewey, for Christ's sakes. Not that that's a bad thing. We all love Dewey. But let's be honest. He's probably not going to be the one to catch the killer. it's a great movie. And the small-town element of it is part of that story. And that's why I included it in my small-town meat hook. My number two, I had to have one, at least one. I limited myself to one. This is going to be my one. I'm talking about It. Oh, Daddy, is this a good one? Now, I've read the book. I've seen both movie adaptations. A lot going on here. Derry, Maine. God damn it, man. How much can one town go through, you ask? Because you got to remember, It, of course, missing children that nobody can seem to remember. And then in latter years, Dreamcatcher, a full-on alien invasion, Derry, Maine, of all places. It's pretty gnarly. It the small-town-ness, if that's a word, is a very big element in all of Stephen King's work. I think it is probably most prolifically displayed in It. The kids being all up in each other's business. Everybody being all up in each other's business. Everybody knows that Henry Bowers and his friends are pieces of shit. Nothing really anybody can do about it. In the movie adaptation, it's because his dad's a cop. In the book and the first movie, it's just because they're kind of thugs and, you know, they'll kill your dog or some other juvenile shit like that. It's that kind of small town politics and dynamic that kind of keeps you It almost makes the story seem more claustrophobic, if you ask me. You know what I mean? You're dealing with this killer clown that can change into whatever you're most afraid of. But at the same time, you got to deal with Eddie Kazbrak's overbearing mom. And that's a motherfucker too. You know what I mean? Then you got the house on Niebold Street that everybody knows to stay the fuck away from, but you now have to go into it and get down there in the basement and find that well and go to the sewage treatment plant. It's a whole ass thing. I know you've seen it. I know you know exactly what I'm talking about. I won't waste your time with it. But that brings me to my number one small town horror film. And I might catch a little bit of crap for this, but I'm going to back it up anyway. I'm talking about The Blair Witch Project. Now, the reason I fear I may get some crap for this is because I would say 80%, probably 90% of the movie takes place out in the woods. And I get that. You're right. But it's the history and the lore of this small town, Burkittsville, and the shit that went on there before it was Burkittsville. That's the crux of your, that's what brought us out here to begin with. You know what I mean? And the lore of what happened throughout the 1940s, the Rustin Parr incident, the Eileen Treacle incident, all the shit that happened in, on, and around Burkittsville is what brought the kids to the town of Burkittsville and then out into the goddamn woods. I may have kind of shat on my own point there because you, now that I think about it, the town is really neither here nor there. The town of Blair is really, I mean, the after effects were felt in Burkittsville, but Blair itself is where the whole shit started. And then the culmination of it taking place out in the woods. You know what I'm talking about. That's going to be my number one small town horror, even though we spend next to no time in the small town. It's the Blair Witch Project. So just to recap, number three, Scream. Number two, It. Number one, Blair Witch Project for me and mates. Let me know what your top three small town horror movies are. There's a lot of them. And if you want to include all Stephen King movies, that's 100% cool. I still want to know about it. Mental Health Hotline, of course, is area code 775-387-0275. Or you just go to paddedroompodcast.com, hit the email link, and let us know what your three favorite movies are. Or you just hit the three on a meat hook link, and you can fill them in there, too, if you want. However you want to do, whatever's easiest for you, you tell me. While you're contemplating that, I think it's time for me to tell you what movies I got to watch this week. Little segment I like to call, What Are You Looking At?
What are you looking at?
How about Thanksgiving from 2023? I finally got around to it. I'm not mad at this. I'm not mad at this at all. I thought it was a pretty good show. Standard holiday fare slasher. They kind of, I felt like he borrowed a lot. Eli Roth directed this, obviously. I felt like he borrowed a lot from Scream. The voice modulator, the high school romance, maybe it's the boyfriend, maybe it's the other guy, maybe it's both of them, maybe they're secretly working together. I felt like it borrowed a lot from the My Bloody Valentine remake, because you had the boyfriend who went away and then he came back. And then you had the current boyfriend that we were all kind of rooting for, but he's still kind of a prick. There's some creative leasing going on, I guess, for lack of a better term. All in all, though, I wasn't mad at it. There was some pretty good kills. The trampoline was my favorite. I was a little disappointed in the killer reveal. I thought that felt like a bit of a cop-out. No pun intended. I'm fired. I can fire myself if I want to, and I will do that. I say it's a good show. Streaming on Netflix right now, inmates, if you're interested. Speaking of streaming on Netflix, I marathoned The Fall of the House of Usher, Woo, Daddy! That is a good show, as everybody already knows, except for me, because I'm wickedly behind, but I finally caught up. Great show. Inspired me to revisit the works of Edgar Allan Poe. There is a lot more than just the fall of the House of Usher in this series. As you may have guessed by looking at the episode titles, a lot of characters from other stories of his show up in this series. A lot of plots from other stories of his show up in the series. Mask of the Red Death. There it is. The Black Cat. There's that. Goldbug. There's that. The Raven, of course, at the end. There's that. The House of Usher, really, as far as the story, I mean, as it pertains to the original story by Edgar Allan Poe, that is a very small portion of what you're watching in this series. It's a great show, I can tell you that. And like I said, I'm doing a deep dive on Edgar Allan Poe right now with all of his stories and poems and stuff. God, I feel like I could do a separate podcast just on that. We should do like a Flanacast, right? Do all the Mike Flanagan series shows. I don't know who the fuck I'd do it with, because my co-hosts have all abandoned me, and so has my son. So I'm not going to waste your time by starting another show that I'm going to have to just walk away from in a couple weeks because nobody's showing up anymore. But I would love to do that at some point. That would be kick-ass. Would you do the movies? I guess so, right? I mean, none of them really tie in together. But what do you got? You got Absentia, of course. You got Oculus, that Ouija movie that he did. You got, of course, Dr. Sleep. I feel like I'm missing one or two. Then you got Haunting of Hill House, then Haunting of Bly Manor, then Midnight Mass, then The Midnight Club, which I haven't quite made it through yet. And now, of course, Fall of the House of Usher. Holy shit, man. It's a great show. I don't want to ruin it for you, but if you're an Edgar Allan Poe guy, you'll love it. Even just for like the little name drops and Easter eggs that get tossed in there. I highly recommend it. I'll just tell you that. That's all I'm looking at this week, inmates. How about some immersion therapy?
Immersion therapy.
We've all seen 100 Bloody Acres, right? That's hilarious. Fertilizer made out of people, but they have to be terrified when you kill them. It's because it ups the pH balance or whatever the fuck. Love the two brothers. It's a horror comedy. This one is much more horror. But there's plenty of... Dude, that scene with the old lady, though. Oh, God. Oh, I'm having nightmares about that. You know what I mean? That I think, is probably the most stomach-turning part of the whole movie. Other than that, it's a great show. I believe we found this one on Tubi. Check that shit out, inmates, if you haven't seen it already. Horror comedy. Very funny. Very horror. There is some horror in there. Your immersion therapy for this week is going to be The Sect from 1991, directed by Michelle Soavi, starring Kelly Curtis and Herbert Holm. This one's streaming on Shudder, inmates. Check that shit out. We will do the same, or at least I will do the same, and we can compare notes next week. What do you say to that? I agree. In the meantime, I got to tell you who I might be this week.
Educating Miss Monica.
First, my clues from last week. I am a member of a traveling folk band, and we're on the road. Me, my banjo player, our significant others, we're in a hotel room. A goddamn family of psychos kick the door in And now they're keeping us hostage, making us do a bunch of weird shit. I just heard on the news that they're on the run because they were in a shootout with the cops. And they killed some college kids before that. So, scary shit. I hope I don't have to wear anybody's face or anything. I am, of course, the Devil's Rejects. And yes, I will end up having to wear somebody's face. Because why not? Why would I not have to wear somebody's face? That's a great movie, too. I think that I still stick with Lords of Salem as my favorite Rob Zombie. That's just me, though. I know a lot of people would disagree with me. I'm a folk horror witchy kind of a guy, so that fits kind of in my wheelhouse. Who might I be this week, you ask? Well, I just bought a house in a very small town. Decent house. Got it for a nickel and a dime, really. Turns out once I get moved in there, the locals are using this house as a weird kind of fucking hunting ground. And I don't understand why. The reason I bought the house to begin with was because I'm trying to, like, move on from the death of my son. Me and my wife have moved in. And I guess, I don't know. There's, like, burned up people walking around in the basement. And the townsfolks have some kind of a deal with the burned up people. And I don't know. They're trying to kill me. I don't know if the townspeople are trying to kill me or the burned up people in the basement are trying to kill me. Either way, I didn't come here for this shit. So what do I do now? Do I move out or fucking file a grievance with the local municipality? I don't know, man. I don't know. You tell me. All right. Who might I be, you ask? Tune in next week, and I will drop some knowledge on you inmates. In the meantime, that's about it for me this week. Thank you very much for joining me. I am sorry about the solo show. Like, comment, subscribe wherever you found this. That helps visibility quite a bit, and it would make my fucking day if you made a little Patreon contribution. Just go to paddedroompodcast.com, hit the Patreon link, and it'll take you right where you need to go with all of our instructions and the prize swag tiers and all that fun shit. Go ahead, do it. Well, go ahead. There's bonus shows I put up over there sometimes. I'm going to start doing that again, by the way. Clearly, I just have to do it by myself because my son's not going to help me, and neither is anybody else. So I think I'm going to restart the Insomnia show. All right, enough about that. Bonus shows coming at you soon. Patreon tiers over there at paddedroompodcast.com. Join me next week for City of the Dead, also known as Horror Hotel, here in Witch Month in the Padded Room. And with that being said, for Buddy in Absentia, Jason in Absentia, witches, burned up people in the basement, cocaine werewolves, don't fucking bother, inmates, don't. I'm going to tell you not to do it. We got to quit supporting this crap, because if we continue to do so, they're going to keep making this dumb shit, and we're going to have to endure meth alligator. Is that what you want? You want a methamphetamine alligator running around? I'm not going to watch that movie. I'm not going to. I suggest you don't either. And the Padded Room Podcast, I'm afraid visiting hours are over.